You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Cork comedian Chris Kent. Chris gave up his day job as an electrician to pursue his calling in comedy. He emerged onto the Irish comedy scene in 2009 after winning the Bulmers Nothing But Funny competition. In 2010, Chris made his debut at one of Ireland's biggest comedy festivals in Dublin's Ivy Gardens. Sit back and enjoy the show. Chris, thanks so much for joining me today. How's everything with you? You're flat out busy.
Yeah, I am. Thankfully, trying not to complain about it, you know, because I'm doing what I love. So, but I am. I'm very busy, and just kept going all the time. Thanks a million, Ian. How are you? Good.
All good, boy. All good. Thank God. Can't complain. Yeah. Sun is shining, no rain today. So happy out.
Yeah, sun's shining here.
You said there that good complaints. You're very, very busy. I suppose growing up, were you always the kind of the child that's always up for a bit of crack and having, you know, a joke and stuff, or were you more into sport, or what was your childhood like?
I would say I was more of an introverted child, to be quite honest with you. I'd have been funny enough with a very small group of friends, you know, so I would definitely wouldn't have been the one in the class trying to make everyone laugh at all. I'd have been, when I was in my comfort zone, so amongst maybe two or three of my friends, that's when I kind of was able to, I suppose, become myself and make them laugh. But I definitely wasn't this outspoken kind of class clown. I didn't have that type of confidence at all as a child or growing up, like, you know.
Do you think there was a particular time in your, I suppose, life at maybe between school and now that you kind of changed that you said, right, I'm going to go out there and kind of be more outspoken?
Yeah, I think what happened with me was I saw a couple of people do it. Des Bishop did comedy in my area, and I didn't do it now, but I saw some people do it. And that really opened my eyes, because this is probably when I was 20. I saw people do comedy that were not necessarily comedians, you know.
Yeah.
Just regular Joe Soaps, just regular people in the pub, and they were getting up doing it. And that really inspired me to say, geez, I'd love to give this a go as an extension of this little thing among my friends, you know. And I suppose that was it then. And I got a whole room of people. Now, I say a whole room, it was probably 15 to 20 people at the time laughing. But I really got a buzz off that then. And just pretty much that was it for me, really. I was into stand up, and that was it, you know.
And you know, like you said there before before we came on there, we were talking about the big street and say Big Vicar Street and the bigger gigs. How would you because I've been to a few comedians now. I was actually supposed to be going to you in the INEC last time, but I'm gonna go this time or the end of the month, I think you're
that's right. Yeah, I'm there again. Let me know.
But how does it start, like say comedy? Like you said, you kind of get a few minutes here and there kind of opening up for people, do you?
Well, that's exactly it. You wouldn't even necessarily be opening for people straight away. Like, I mean, it might be different nowadays because people have online, and I think they're taking off even quicker, you know? So with me, it's almost like an apprenticeship. So you get in and you get your first couple of gigs under your belt, really. And it's just about overcoming nerves and slightly expanding your set then, so you only have 5 minutes to begin with, and next thing you'll have 10 minutes, and then you might go up to Dublin with your 10 minutes to do it in a different comedy club or Belfast or Galway. And this was all kind of while I had a job back then, and then eventually down the line you might get a 15 minute spot that you got paid for, you know. And that was a big thrill as well, to be quite honest, just to get paid for something that you absolutely love. And then it was a slow process for me anyway. Yeah. I was knocking around on the comedy scene for a long time, and then eventually I started to make a little bit of money. And eventually people like that now saw me. So people like PJ Gallagher, and he said, oh, will you open for me? And I opened for him then. That was probably 2 years in, you know. And then you'll start headlining comedy clubs, and then it's all about doing your own show then. For me then, I wanted to write my own hour, and I did that in like 2012. And then I sort of started trying to tour after a couple of years then, and instead of being someone support act, I wanted to be kind of, I want to do this on my own, see what I can bring in myself, you know?
So like you said, it is kind of gradual, kind of working, building up the...
It's very gradual, but I think for me anyway, I needed it. I needed that. There's a big learning curve, like, you know. I think I'm really happy that I've been in comedy now nearly 20 years, I'd say.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm doing it since I'm 20. Yeah, I'm doing it since I'm 21, like, so I'm 40 now, like, a couple of years in between where we didn't do it, but, and we'll call it a hobby for the first couple of years too. But, you know, it all kind of stands to you, I think. All those nights that I did, all those times where I drove up to Belfast or Dublin and had these little gigs, and even the tougher gigs, like, you're kind of grateful for all of them. Because now, when I'm walking out now and all the people are there to see me and they're in those big, lovely rooms, that's just like a dream for me. Because
I'm thinking back, like, when you were 20 years old, getting a few minutes here, then...
Getting a few minutes here and getting a few minutes there, and often taking on gigs where people were setting them up and they weren't really set up for comedy at all. So doing gigs in pubs, where there was, you know, a football match on a telly somewhere behind you, like, and you're battling there, and that's kind of giving you the skills, I suppose, to, you're really outside your comfort zone, and then you're put somewhere where people are paying to see you and you've accomplished more skills on the way up. So you can kind of really sit into it, like, you know.
Absolutely. Have you noticed a big, like, obviously there's people on the Irish scene, you know, I'm going to chat about in a few minutes, about how big it is at the moment, like, people coming through. Have you noticed a big difference, Chris, from when you were that 20-year-old getting into it compared to 20-year-olds now getting into it? Is there a big difference?
Oh, huge. Absolutely huge. I think mainly online is what is... Yeah. That's the kind of... The game changer, really, because I never really got, now I had little bits of TV, but, well, I suppose when I was in my early 20s and I was on the comedy scene like they are now, the only way to get a break was really TV, and that's what you're kind of hanging out for. And you could build an audience for yourself live, to be fair, like, and just keep going at it. And I tried, but just the way social media has changed now, I think the algorithms have changed, and, you know, you can reach hundreds of thousands of people, and they don't have to be following you in the first place, which has changed. Like, you could have 100 followers, but your video could go viral still, you know? So that's the big kind of change, really, that I've noticed now. So you can come into it, but you still need the material. That's the thing. So if you start off in the morning and 2 or 3 of your videos blow up, it's very, very difficult to have, say, an hour to go out with your own tour then.
Yeah.
Like, in a short space of time. So that's why I'm kind of glad it happened that way for me, because I had multiple shows. I had, like, this is my 8th show that I'm on now, I think, my 8th or my 9th show. So that's how many shows I've done down through the years, how many hours of material I've built up, you know?
It's a slow process, like, isn't it?
It's a slow process, but obviously I quite enjoyed it, but at the same time, maybe it could have gone a small bit faster for me. You know what I mean? But
and like you said about the algorithm, they're changing, like, you see there now, Chris, on, like, say, the likes of Instagram and TikTok. Mm. You know, your man is a Matt Rife, his name is, like,
that's right, yeah,
he's on, and there's another fella, is he Liverpool, is he Paul
Smith, yeah,
like on TikTok.
Very good.
Instagram, like you said, you could only have a few followers, but then people are watching it, sharing it, and like, it is. Do you find that when people put up, even like comedians that do, say, like, different sketches and stuff, do you think that they have to, is it important to not do them at a show in person then, because people would have already seen them, or how would you kind of?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, for me anyway, I mean, some people will go, okay, this is a little taster and this is what you're going to see. But for instance, the show that I'm touring at the moment now, none of that is online. None of it is content that I have on YouTube. So if you're coming to see me and you've seen me on any of my social media platforms, you won't see any of the jokes there.
I think that's great, Chris.
Yeah. Unless you've seen me in a comedy club working that stuff up, which I think is fair because it has to happen somewhere. You won't have seen it, like, and that's the most surprising thing I actually get, is a lot of people come up to me and go, oh, I stopped watching your videos because I was coming here tonight.
Really?
Like, oh, there's no need because I don't repeat, I don't do anything.
Yeah.
But when I write a new show next year, all of this show now will be cut up, like, and that will be online, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it helps sell the next one. But yeah, it's important for me anyway to go. I just want to go out there with a new show, like, you know.
When I was doing a bit of research, I came across in 2009, kind of at the going back to the very start, you
That's
took
right.
part in the was it the Bulmers Nothing But Funny
Yeah, that's
competition.
correct. Yeah. The
Was
Bulmers
that
Nothing.
kind of like for people like kind of debuting into the acting scene in Ireland?
That was break. That's people breaking in. Yeah. It was actually a great competition. It was going for a couple of years, you know. And I was going about 3 or 4 years at that point, but I'd moved back from Australia and I was kind of working as an electrician over there, but I was also doing bits of gigging. And I moved back and I was trying to get gigging straight away. And that was a nice little get to see everybody. I would say back then, no, there wouldn't be half the amount of comedians. That competition probably had every up and coming comedian in it, and it was still
Really?
only about 50 or 60, as opposed to it being probably hundreds now, you know. But it was brilliant, and it really kind of gave me a nice little springboard into a couple of the clubs. Because I moved back from Australia, I hadn't really established myself here yet, so it really helped me get up and off the ground, like, you know.
Do you think it improves, say, your self-confidence for going out on stage in bigger crowds?
Yeah, definitely. And also maybe kind of, you gotta take them with a pinch of salt, these competitions. But when you do win them, they definitely do kind of help your confidence and go, all right, other people believe that this is good as well, you know, because there's judges and there's audiences involved and all that, and it gives you a bit of confidence to go forward, like, and it's all these little stepping stones.
I suppose nowadays there's the crowd, like there's people that are more sensitive to jokes and that kind of stuff. Like it's the world that we're living in now. It's just that way. Do you have to, and I've spoken to another comedian about when you're in a crowd, Chris, you have to kind of judge them in one way to see, right, I got a reaction out of that joke. I can go on and say a riskier joke now, or do you have to kind of judge the audience?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say more so the audience are judging me, like, with
Yeah.
that. But I would say I don't think any of my stuff is really controversial. It's all
Yeah.
personal stories about me, and I'm often the biggest victim in everything. But
Yeah.
of course, there is going to be times where someone won't be happy with it. But some of the time as well, it's just they can't take themselves out of my joke, you know. For example, I remember doing a joke about my dog years ago. My dog had been put down, and I had a very funny routine about it, you know, about him having a stroke and being put down. And it was hilarious and it was true. But somebody really got offended after one of the shows about that joke, you know.
Really?
And I was like, they had lost the dog. I was like, they lost the dog as well. But I was like, this is about my dog, though. You know, I actually wasn't joking about your dog at all. I've never even met your dog, to be
Yeah.
quite honest. Like, you know. So I think sometimes people can put themselves into the joke themselves. But at the same time, you know, everyone has a right to be offended by something. But I can't. I think you kind of just have to maybe check yourself before you even do the jokes. And I'm not saying I'll never go back on my word and go back and say, actually, that was wrong. Because sometimes the only way to find out is by doing
By
something
doing it,
and
yeah.
going, okay, actually, I rethink that now. But like I said, most of my stuff is personal anecdotes. It's about myself, it's about my family, it's about my kids. So to be honest, it's more about offending them. Like, if I have a telling a story where me and my wife are in it, I would be more concerned if she came to me and said, I don't like that actually, or you know what I mean, or my parents, or so I always try and think about them, the people that are in the stories that I'm sort of portraying, like, you know.
It's handy to have that feedback as well from the likes of family and stuff. Like when
Yeah.
I'd be the exact same, Chris. Like when I was in school, after my accident, the career guidance teacher was asking, do you know, I saw what you want to be when you're older. Like I
Yeah.
was obviously just after the accident, I said I want to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
But I think like, do you know the way the Irish, especially the Irish, they have a great sense of humor in general, like, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of dark as well in ways, like, you know, I don't
Yeah.
know where it comes from, but I think we like turning something into humor. There's great power in it, like, you know.
Absolutely. How
Yeah,
would you
I can.
I suppose when it comes to writing your own material, Chris, do you have a certain way to time when you think your own stuff, or do you set aside a certain time and write down your own material, or how would you like to do it?
It kind of changes. Like, a lot of the time, something will kind of come to me, you know, from my situation, really. So my last couple of shows are about whatever's going on in my life. So the show that I'm currently touring, we were trying to buy a house, and it was extremely stressful, and we never got there in the end. But then that turned into, for me, like 20 minutes of material, you know, just my, I suppose, experience of that. And sometimes then it is, I do need to set aside some time and just try and write. And then it's trial and error. Then it's like, sometimes I'll think something's funny, and I bring it to the comedy club, or I bring it to an open mic and it won't be, or else it'll just need work, or I'll be telling it backwards or something, you know. But mostly it's anecdotal and it's inspired by whatever's going on in my life. Like the last show, the show now is about buying a house. The show before that was kind of about, I think it's about living in England, and maybe, you know, this show is about going back to work as well and giving up your job. And the show about that was about, before that was about becoming a dad. And then before that it was about getting married. So it's kind of whatever's going on in my life. That's what drives it, the narrative, you know? But what the most important thing for me is remembering, and yeah. I used to be a lot better at this, remembering to take the notes. So I'll be walking down the street, or I'll be with Niamh, my wife, and I'll say something that is kind of funny off the cuff, and I'll be kind of percolating that, going, oh, that could be something there for a routine, you know. But then I'd forget to take the note. So that's the most important thing for me, take the notes and then visit them afterwards. So it could be a week later, you're sitting down and you're like, oh, I have these three or four little things here now that I'll try and tease into a bit of a bigger routine. And then you take that into the comedy club, and it's like, it'll either be good or it won't, but I'd never discount it either way the first time. I'd do it again and do it again. And eventually it'll most times turn into something, you know.
Trying to come together.
And it's just about remembering it, and then it kind of fine tuning it, and then it kind of almost turns into a song. There's a bit of a rhythm to it, and there's timing involved, and, you know,
I was always interested in that. Like, on stage, would you have something, say, on the floor, like, to say what order to do the jokes in, or is it different?
Yeah. Early days of the show, I did, because you're learning it. And even though you know it, in a way, you're kind of like, it's an hour. And this show is a little bit long, actually. It's about an hour and 20. So it's just remembering everything. And some jokes will set something up further along the show. So it's remembering to say that, you know what I mean? So if I forget to set something up in the first 10 minutes, that I'm going to be coming back to it 50 minutes later, it's a disaster when you get there. You can't do it. So it's more so for that. The show now, I'm currently, I could, you know, I just don't need anything for it, really. I can just do it. Like, I just remember it every night. But then if I tried to remember last year's show, Christy doesn't live here, I would struggle. So I think one takes the place of another, you know?
It is. Did you have any, I suppose, comedians that you kind of not looked up to, but you kind of based your own, I suppose, material and style off them? Like, I'm a huge fan of, say, the likes of Kevin Hart now and stuff. Did you have any comedian that you really liked?
I didn't, to be quite honest with you. Not that I didn't really like them, but I wasn't massively into stand-up, you know?
Yeah.
I used to watch, like, when I was a kid growing up, my mum and dad got Dumbelievables tapes and stuff like that. Yeah. And they were brilliant. But I was never into stand-up. I'd never been to a stand-up gig. I think my friend, alright, gave me a Richard Pryor DVD. And he gave me also a Tommy Tiernan one, but it was around the time I'd kind of started anyway. So I think it's a good thing in a way, because so I'm less impressionable and I can find my own voice a little bit quicker, that I wasn't really into it. And actually it was the people in the pub that were like, oh, I know him. Like, I know he's not famous and he's doing it. And he's talking about something, that happened 2 days ago. And that was more so for me, like, going, all right, this is, because it's too much of a leap. If I had went and watched Tommy Tiernan back then, or Kevin Hart, like you said, in a big arena, and if I was kind of in the audience watching that, I would have found it very hard to make the leap to that.
Yeah.
Because you're not seeing the 12 years before that, the build up to that. And you can often forget about that.
You're
and you
just
could
seeing the
say,
success story.
You're only seeing that, like, and you're going to go, oh, how can I do that now? Well, you actually can do that straight away. You can be inspired by it, but it's very unlikely you'll be able to do that right now. Whereas if you kind of go and see people doing it for the first time, second time, third time, you're learning all the time. And it's more inspiring for me, really, seeing people that are unknown and people that are taking a risk and failing, even, like, you know, you're saying, all right, and that wasn't too bad. Do you know what I mean? And it will happen as well. It happened for me, like, you'll have a bad gig and they're hard to take initially, but you're going, oh, it wasn't actually the end of the world. I'm still here.
You don't see the success story from the early days up until just now.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
Like that's important as well. Do you know, for it's the same on social media. You see young girls there looking up to the likes of the Kardashians and stuff. They're only seeing the success story online. We were saying there before we came on, Chris, about you in the, say, big arenas like Vicar Street and stuff. Is that like the Vicar Street? Would that be the kind of mecca of comedy in Ireland?
I think so, yeah. It's definitely up there. Like, it's where a lot of comedians will tell you that's my goal, to do a show there in Vicar Street.
Do you have any favourite venue?
Yeah, Vicar Street is up there. Vicar Street is up there. I find it hard to pick. I love the Everyman in Cork as well, though. It's an old theatre. It's where I did my first big show. It's where I did my first, like, big kind of, I'm taking a big risk and I'm going into a big room.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it. Like, because I don't think I sold it out, but it was close enough. It was well beyond my expectation. It was, like, close enough to 600 people or something.
Really?
And this is when I had 1,000 followers online or something. And it was, like, one of those ones that stuck with me because they were all there to see me. I couldn't really get over it, like, you know. So that venue is always kind of special to me. And it's a great atmosphere. They're very close to you, even though it's a theatre. So I'd say Vicar Street and the Everyman, I really love to do them. But there's loads of gigs around the country and loads of gigs around the UK as well. Special comedy rooms like City Limits in Cork. They all have something different to offer, you know. A couple of the comedy clubs in the UK as well, like The Stand in Newcastle. They just have a kind of an energy that is addictive. But yeah, Vicar Street would have been up there. That would have been something I would have been dreaming about now for a couple of years before it happened. I'm a big kind of believer in that. I didn't realize I was doing it, but I actually was manifesting and dreaming about all this stuff.
It must be a pinch-me moment like then when you're selling.
You have to picture it. And also, like, I remember, I've told this now to my friends before, and I've said it on a podcast before, but I remember being at the back of the Everyman and I was getting on the air coach to Dublin, you know? And there's a picture of the Everyman kind of on the back of it. There used to be a picture of the theatre, like, on the back of the building.
Yeah.
And I used to be kind of just daydreaming. I don't even think I'd ever been in there, you know? I'd be daydreaming going, geez, I'd love to do a show in there someday. I'd love to do a show. And I would be getting the air coach to Dublin to do a gig for €50, you know? And sometimes getting the air coach straight back, or I'd be daydreaming away the whole time. But then also working hard to try and, even back then when I was writing a show, like, I would just go, all right, time for another one now. There's no point in hanging around, and time for another one. I was always very kind of ambitious in my writing and my kind of, like, what I wanted to achieve stand-up wise, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then at all, obviously, you can't just, I don't think, want something and visualize it, and then that's not really enough. You have to be obsessed about getting there, like, you know.
Absolutely. You performed in Killarney a good few times, have you?
I did, yeah. I love Killarney as
what
well.
What you make down there?
Down the INEC. Brilliant.
You're,
I actually,
the end of the month, are you?
I'm there. When am I there now? I'm there in May again, aren't I? I think May.
The 28 or something, I think.
Yeah, I'll be down. Sure, come along. I'd love
to. 100%.
Yeah, I'd love 100%. To have you.
You like it down here, do you?
I do. I used to also go down. My friend Cornelius Patrick O'Sullivan, he runs a little gig in the Kingdom Comedy Club on Tuesday nights, and it's kind of seasonal, you know?
Yeah.
It's in the Shire Bar, small little bar.
Oh, yeah. Kind of based on the Hobbit up there, isn't it?
That's
on the left.
They have a little side room in there that's probably a capacity now of 30 people, but he kind of gets a few tourists in there, and it's ideal for me because on a Tuesday night there, when I was writing this show now that I'm currently doing, I used to drive down there on a Tuesday night, and there was kind of no pressure. And I would be able to kind of have a little bit of time, you know? So he might give me, he said, do whatever you want, do a half an hour, do 40 minutes. And it was great because I would just get as much of the newer stuff in there as I could.
Yeah.
And they were all tourists, and it would be a different crowd the following week. Then I'd go down again 2 weeks later with the same kind of set and just listen back to it and try and make it a little bit better. And then
There are
so on and
comedy
so
clubs
forth.
in most counties.
There actually isn't in Ireland, to be honest.
No.
There's not. It's kind of surprising. Yeah, it's kind of surprising. Like, there should be, but there's one or two in Cork. Cork's strong enough. There's actually three or four in Cork. There's a good few in Dublin. There's one or two in Galway.
Yeah.
There's not like Belfast. Belfast has got a great scene, but it's not quite like the UK where
Yeah.
there is almost one in every county or city, like, you know.
And like we said about the UK there, Chris, would that have been, I suppose, one of your second most fast growing fan base compared to Ireland, or would it have been a
Yeah,
different country?
I think so. Yeah, I think the UK, because I'm touring this show in the UK as well, and that's
Yeah.
massively huge for me, like, to be selling out venues there in Birmingham and Manchester and
It's huge, like.
places that I have gigged in the past, but I was like, it was great to see them coming out, you know.
Yeah.
And also, they were not all Irish, which was brilliant. And I loved that my comedy was making other people laugh, you know. So, a lot of the time, there might have been 10% Irish, but it was mainly, you know, people from Birmingham or Manchester or just the UK in general. I haven't really tested the water anywhere else. I'm hoping to get to America. Like, I want to start the visa process and start gigging in America. I'd also like to go back to Australia. I've done a good bit in Australia down through the years, but just with a family now and everything.
Were you
Trying to
living
get.
there for a while, or were
I
you
was
there?
living there for about a year. Yeah, just over a
Really?
year in 2008 or something. Yeah.
I'd say it's
Brilliant.
unreal over there, is it?
Oh, beautiful. Like, beautiful. But
Like
it's
my
not
cousin
Ireland. Like, you
there
know, it's
now,
a
his
bit
mom,
far away.
she said like 6 o'clock in the morning, they're out jogging on
Yeah.
the beach like it's.
Oh, you're out. Yeah. It's like the day starts early and it kind of finishes early as well. Like, you know,
Yeah.
they're kind of
We just there, we'll touch on, say, our own COVID times. That was obviously a massive impact on the whole, like, say, of everyone working, but especially the kind of entertainment and the music and the comedy kind of business. Did you find it hard coming out of COVID, or did you use it as, I suppose, an excuse to write a few bits of stuff?
I didn't find it hard coming out of COVID, actually. I found it a little easier. I found when COVID happened, a massive shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because I was living in the UK at the time and I was in the middle of a tour here in Ireland. And I would have had my debut Vicar Street back then. And
Really?
the every yeah, that was coming up. That was like 2 weeks after lockdown, you know. And I also had my debut. No, I was it wasn't my debut. It was like my Everyman. My second or third Everyman, but it was sold out. So I was in the middle of a tour in, I suppose, in Ireland, and I was flying back and forth from the UK. I was based in the UK. And then when it happened, it was just a shock to the system, really. And see, the thing is, when you're an Irish comedian, when you're a comedian, not just an Irish comedian, you build a show, you write a show, which takes me about 7 or 8 months, maybe a year. So in a sense, like, all the work was done, you know. And not only that, I had been promoting this tour for the bones of 9 months as well.
Yeah.
So, and I had already sold the tickets and I kind of had already spent the money in my head as well. And I needed it for rent and stuff like that. And then for the rug to be just pulled that quickly, that was very hard. And that was like, oh God, this is never. I think naivety back then, we thought everything was coming back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it set in that, like, this is probably not going to come back. And then a year in, it was like, or 6 months in, we moved back to Ireland and I felt like comedy was never coming back, to be quite honest. I just kind of given up on it and I went back to work as an electrician, which is kind of what this show is about as well, giving up my job second time around. But that was scary, like, you know, just first of all, having all those tickets and all those gigs kind of whipped from under you. It'd be a bit like, you know, you're doing a job for someone for a year and you've
Yeah.
done all the work and all of a sudden they're going, actually, I'm not going to pay, you know, for that. And all it all worked out very well in the end, but just back then, especially going back to work after not doing a job like that for 12 years, it was daunting, like walking onto a building site and just kind of being back. But it was good, like, in another way. It's very good for grounding you and
Yeah, go back to what
keeping you
you.
humble, like, you know, and I'll never forget it. And I'll never forget the day it took me back on my employers and they gave me a job I was back home in Ireland in my childhood bedroom with my wife and kids, and comedy looked like it was never coming back, and they gave me a job and another chance. And to be honest with you, I actually loved it, genuinely loved. After a couple of months, when I got over the nerves on the site, I really loved working as an electrician again. And then initially, when the comedy started coming back, I was actually going up and down to Killarney as well. There was kind of some...
Boy.
There was a few COVID type of gigs. I don't know if you remember, like, where they were kind of leaving half of the room in.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And some of them were happening outside. And that's when we started getting a taste for it again. And it was great. Like, I was like, you know. And then I just started building it up again. And it was a very hard decision in the end. But I went, I have to go for it again, really, you know.
Yeah.
My wife kind of gave me a lot of encouragement. A lot of it is in the show now that you see. But yeah, so in a way, it's kind of the best thing that ever happened to me, because I feel like tour that I'm on about, that was kind of whipped from under me, we finished that off anyway in, you know, like 2 years later, which was mad. But at the same time, you know, had nothing happened, maybe I just kept would have kept ticking along at that level. But the fact that I went back to work, and I really, really, when I quit my job that second time, I really, really made a good go of it, and I put all my content out there. And that's what kind of gave me this step up and a real break, I suppose, you know. I'm not sure if I would have done that had I not gone back to work, you know. So
yeah,
it all kind of works out.
How important there, before we finish up, like you mentioned there, your wife and kids, how important are family and friends, even before you had kids, when you were even, I suppose, getting into comedy, when you were driving up and down for the small gigs, how important is the support from, say, loved ones when you are going through the early days?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. My wife now would have been always very supportive, and she would have been the first one I told years ago when I was only doing it as a hobby. I remember she was the very first person I told. I said, I'd love to do this. I'd love if this was my job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this was like just a long time ago. And she was like, yeah, great. Go for it. Like, you know, we were parents would be less, not that they're less supportive, but it is a lot for them to take in, to get your head around, you know. Like, I was working as an electrician when I started comedy in 2005, and they were kind of, I didn't tell them for ages actually, but even when I did tell them, it's such a slow process at the start. I suppose they'd be right, you know, they'd be mad if they weren't kind of questioning it. But when I was kind of going, oh, I'm going to Dublin there now for a gig, I'm not getting any money, I'm just going up and I'm going to come straight back and I have work in the morning, or I'm going to Belfast, and you know, there's an element of them kind of going, oh Jesus, are you wasting his time here or what, like. So once you don't give into that yourself, really, you know, and you go right, you learn then how to navigate your story about your gigs and all that. And probably I was playing it down for a while. My dreams were alive and kicking, but I was probably playing it down a little bit, going, all right, I'll just keep doing it. I kind of know what I'm doing here, but I don't need to go telling everybody, because the last thing you want, actually, weirdly, is someone else's doubt getting in your way. Like, you know what I mean? You can't just go, because it doesn't take much, really, to tip you back over the other way. For someone else to go, oh, really? And they start questioning it, and then you start questioning it, and you're like, why am I driving to Belfast for no money? Do you know what I mean? And staying in a hostel and then driving back the next morning. You start questioning yourself. So you kind of play it down and you go, you know, you're careful with your story, like I said. And but yeah, I've definitely had great support. And now everyone is very supportive, and they have been for years.
Yeah.
It did take a little bit for maybe my parents to come fully on board and understand it, which you wouldn't expect them to understand, really.
No, especially like when, I suppose, comedy, it's not, especially back then, it's not like people look at it as like a full-time job.
No, it wasn't. No, even going into a bank or anything like that, because what was really weird about it actually was in 2009 when the recession happened and I lost my job as an electrician. And that was the be-all and end-all. That was, you're never going to be out of work. If you're an electrician, you're never out of work.
Yeah.
And I was out of work and it was a disaster. You couldn't get work. But what had happened around then at that time was all those little gigs and all those little journeys that I was making started to pay dividends, and I started to make a little bit of money off comedy. So ironically, when I lost my job as an electrician, which I suppose they were kind of hoping that I would keep forever and almost essentially putting all my eggs in that basket. When I lost my job as an electrician, it was the comedy then. I couldn't get any more work, and it was actually the comedy that started paying. And I started getting by on the comedy then, and turning that situation of not being able to get work as an electrician into comedy. And then that's where it started really kind of rolling for me. It was then 2009, kind of around that time when I entered that competition, and I just started getting an agent and getting more and more work, like, you know.
Absolutely. Last question. The Irish comedy scene nowadays, it's obviously some brilliant up and coming comedians, and there's ones now like yourself that are well established now. Is it looking good for the Irish comedy scene, even for young people coming up?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're very we kind of punch above our weight, really, like when it comes to other countries, even, to be honest with you. There's a very, very healthy scene here. There's loads of brilliant comics here that they're not even new, really, but they're just like, I love watching them. Like, you know, they're really strong, and I reckon there's a lot more people going to be breaking out in the next couple of years. Like, you know, it's only going
to media will help that, won't it?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. There's some great talent coming up here in Cork. Ciara Barnes, they're very funny. Like, there's like a couple of comedians in that have been coming up the last couple of years. Shane Clifford there now is, Jesus, he's a Kerry man, actually, isn't he?
I think he is, yeah. I've seen
he's sensational. Like, I genuinely love watching him, like, you know. He's absolutely brilliant, and he's flying it, but I think it's only a matter of time before he breaks as well. But I think, yeah, it's in safe hands, definitely. That's only two. Like, there's so many more coming through, and it's a nice scene. It's a nice scene as well, I will say that much. For the most part, it's supportive, and people like to see each other do well, especially in Cork here now. It's nice, you know, it's supportive. There's people around, there's people trying to help, which I think I would have, you know, you'd really appreciate it when you're starting out. It doesn't take a lot to point someone in the direction, or say, do that, or go to that person, or you'll get a gig over here, like, you know.
And you remember who helped you in the early days, don't
you? Absolutely, yeah, 100%. There was a big lifeline to me when I started getting supports off, like, PJ Gallagher and even Neil Delamere there now. I remember those gigs coming in when I was just dependent on stand-up comedy and nothing else. And when those support slots come in, and you're like, you just get an email, for instance, back then, and it's like, there's 6 gigs here, or there's 7 gigs here, do you want them? You would be like, oh, thank you so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's nice now for me to be able to start to do that and give people gigs, and I kind of run a few gigs as well. And yeah, happy to kind of help people along the way if I can.
Brilliant. Chris, you're an absolute gent, and I'm
looking forward
now to seeing you live. So thanks a million for...
Great chatting to you. Thanks a million for having me.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to Chris for coming on tonight and sharing his own story about leaving his own job as an electrician to pursue his passion in comedy, and he's killing it and he's doing very well. I always see him online there. He's selling out shows across the pond in England and here in Ireland as well, and he's been very successful as a comedian, so I'm sure there's big things to come for him as well in the future. So thanks a million to Chris for coming on tonight and sharing his story. If you have any suggestions, questions, or requests for next week's show, you can get in contact with me through my Instagram, enoconnell321. My Twitter is enoconnell00. Or you can send me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I hope you're all having a great week so far. Stay tuned in here to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
You're listening to Standout with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.